Heterodorks. Heteroduck storks.
Hello, TERFs and trannies. You're listening to the Heterodorks podcast. My name is Corinna Cohn.
My name is Nina Paley. I have Crohn's disease.
you became a crone, and now you have a crone.
Yes, I have the disease of Crohn's. It's called Crohn's disease.
I'm sorry,
Nina. I just thought I would blurt that out because it's on my mind.
Well, you've started having health problems sometime in the late summer, right?
Yeah.
So when I found out that you might have really serious intestinal issues and you thought that there's a chance that it might be Crohn's disease, I knew that I was going to be a good supportive friend for you because I rushed to put into Google the search Crohn's disease chocolate. And it said, actually, chocolate is okay to eat if you have Crohn's disease. So I know no matter how bad it gets, it is not the worst.
Yeah, I think I have a separate issue with chocolate.
Yeah, we aren't allowed to talk about that on Spotify.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, hello, TERFs and trannies. I'm going to take my mind off of my own problems and instead think about larger problems, like the problems of groups that I belong to.
Yeah, I should point out, we often have guests. And in fact, we recorded an excellent podcast last month, which I have been remiss in editing, but this one will come out first.
All right.
And a guest today.
Yep. Okay, so let's just jump on in here.
Yeah, so you recorded and published an episode without me recently with our mutual friend, Shannon Thrace, talking about the blue dress. And I have to admit, I have not even listened to that episode yet, Nina.
Wow, you're my greatest fan.
It's been like this ever since. So let's give a little bit of background. We went to, as guests, to the GenSpect conference at the beginning of November, so just about a month ago. You were invited to speak on a panel. I was invited to give a 20-minute talk about political organizing in the United States. We met a number of new people and got to see some of our very dear friends and some of them former guests of this podcast. We had a wonderful time. We went to Casa Bonita and watched cliff divers as we ate Mexican food. And we got to meet Phil Ille, and he was wearing a blue dress, which you were so impressed by that you went out and you got a duplicate, which you have not taken off since it's arrived. And it's starting to look, I would say, a little bit ratty. Sorry, Nina.
Blue is not my color.
The blue is fine. It's just everything that you've eaten over the last 2 weeks is obviously, it's sort of evident from what I can see. Our listeners can't see it, but I can. What happened is that Mr. Phil Ille, who's written he's been a previous guest here, but has also written a book on the phenomenon of auto-hetero.
I think he just calls it auto-sexuality. He's an auto-gynophile. He's out and he's proud. Well, I don't know if he's proud, but he's out and he's coping and he's male and he's a man in a dress.
And uses men's spaces.
Yep. He knows he's a man. He knows he's a man who wants to be a woman, but he knows he's a man.
And unlike me, who attempted to live as a woman for decades and have now live as whatever I am, an adult human weirdo, he never even tried that. That's not his thing.
But apparently you're a repulsive pervert also who makes women uncomfortable and to whom I am in thrall.
Yeah, once you are nice to me, I will give you permission to remove that blue dress, but not until then. I have a list of tasks for you.
Yard
so
work.
There is a group of people online who are very online people. I would say that they probably know every nook and cranny of the online world more than they probably know, let's say, their own houses, I would guess.
More than they know their own principles.
No, well, they don't have those. They've got they've got a tribe, though. But, you know, we've talked about this before. If you have a tribe, you don't really need principles. And if you have principles, a tribe is nice, but it's not mandatory. But they have a tribe, and they were very, very upset about the fact that Genspect had allowed Phil to participate in the conference wearing his blue dress.
Yep. And they, yeah, they're talking about it still during the conference. Yes. No one complained. No one seemed to even find him weird. Everyone was just chilling out and hanging out. And then afterwards, pictures circulated on Twitter, and people who were not in attendance at the conference decided or determined that he was gross and making women uncomfortable. And it's just sort of spun out from there.
Yeah. Would you say that it's fair to say that we are experiencing a moral, what do we call it? A moral panic?
I guess. I don't know. I don't know exactly what's happening other than fracturing. I don't even know what to call myself right now. Like, I've been called a TERF, and so I ironically claim the phrase TERF ironically, which was why when I made that TERF Tranny Alliance logo, I thought it was funny.
Yes.
Many of the people who are in this purity spiral right now also were outraged by the TERF Tranny Alliance.
Yes, the same people.
Yes, they're the same people. And they certainly do not want a man in a dress anywhere near vulnerable women and children.
Yes.
So this whole thing with me saying, like, yeah, I'm a TERF, deal with it, I don't even want to say that anymore. I don't even know what to call myself anymore. I think I need to reclaim the word liberal.
You're like a tribeless Jew.
And I think I need to reclaim that word because I care about liberty. And even though I see modern trans rights activism as a threat to women's rights and a threat to children, I simultaneously do not want to sacrifice freedoms that I and others enjoy at the altar of safety. So for me, I wish to balance liberty and security. There's no perfect liberty. There's no perfect security. But I value liberty. And what I am seeing and hearing from this faction of, I don't know what to call them either. What do we, I've been calling some of the leaders femagogues.
Yeah.
But I don't know what to call the followers of the femagogues. But maybe femagogues is the word. I don't know.
Well, we got to be careful labeling people because labels have a way of moving outside of our control, don't they?
Everything's outside of our control. But what can I say? Like, reactionary. They'd call themselves feminists, and they still call themselves gender critical, even though they're not remotely gender critical, as far as I can tell.
And they also hate the term. They disavow it and will not use it, and will say that they absolutely are not gender critical because gender doesn't exist. And then when some tranny comes along and says, hey, I helped create this movement, then they get all upset about it, Nina.
Yeah, they were real mad at you. But let's get back to that because I'm already knocked off course.
Yeah.
But anyway, this faction seems to be primarily concerned with security right now.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out that we joke about the size of our audience because we say that it's like 20 people, but it's really closer to 40. Some people who are frequent listeners of this podcast have found themselves with a pretty different point of view on this issue than we have. And while you are contemplating, hey, what should I even call myself? I think a small number of our regular listeners may be asking themselves a similar question just on the other side right now. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Anyway, they seem primarily concerned with security. So yes. The complaint about Phil Ille is that he posed a security threat to women and children because he would make them uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And they are so exhausted from men pushing and pushing and pushing on women's boundaries.
Yes.
That they will tolerate none of it now. None whatsoever. So women's discomfort with having sex segregated spaces violated by men is now for them equated with women's discomfort at seeing a man wearing a dress in a public place.
Yes, you could call it a microaggression.
And
actually, I guess it's a tantamount to a microaggression.
I don't think they would say micro.
Well, we don't know what's under the dress.
A man is under the oh, that's what you mean. Ha 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 ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, that was a dick joke.
That was a dick joke. That was a dick move.
That's quite bold for me to be making dick jokes.
On my computer.
That was an inside joke.
Yeah, I get very inside. Yes, an inside out joke.
Yeah, thank you for explaining that one.
On my computer screen is this article called Revulsion Revolution, The Protective Power of Disgust, Safeguarding Society Against Public Paraphilias by Amy Sousa.
Yeah. Do you know who Amy Sousa is?
She's someone that I've followed online and have always liked.
Yep. She's done a lot of work to put together demonstrations, I guess is the right word, in various places in the United States, I think. I think she's done something in New Jersey or New York. I'm pretty sure she's done some demonstrations in Texas. I think she's done some demonstrations in California, primarily, I want to say, around raising the very important issue of the safety of female prisoners, where they're being forced to share quarters with male prisoners who claim that they're women. So if people don't know who Amy Sousa is, I think that the work she's been doing on those issues is tremendously important. But what was it about this article, Nina?
This article discusses revulsion, mm-hmm. which, you know, disgust is a moral indicator. I was thinking about the Jonathan Haidt book, The Righteous Mind.
Yeah, right.
And
great book.
Yes. Disgust is something we all experience. It is informative to us. And this article seemed to be saying, you know, disgust is real and it's informing you about real things, and we should heed our disgust. We Yes. should attend to our disgust and let it inform our, well, was she suggesting it inform our policies?
My impression is that she's saying that it should inform your personal conduct. How you treat other people. So that if you see a behavior from an actor that is upsetting to you, that you should embrace that feeling of that instinctual feeling of being upset by it, and that you should allow yourself to feel revulsion from the thing that is upsetting you. So if it's a whisper, you should amplify it instead of ignoring it. That's my impression.
I can understand that, given that for the last 8 years or so, maybe more, maybe it's 9 or 10 years, women have been told to suppress and ignore their disgust reaction. So there are those signs in women's bathrooms that say, oh, do you see someone who looks like they don't belong here? Well, shut your mouth. They know better than you do. So this is a...
Have you seen a sign like that before? I'm just curious.
I've seen photos of signs like that. I have not been in a lot of women's rooms on the campus of the U of I. I think I might have seen one there.
I suppose very liberal places are where you're most likely to see one of those.
I think schools.
Well, I don't think public schools. I think universities maybe.
Yes.
But I don't think most public schools, that would be a surprise to me.
Yeah, like not grade schools, but universities, sure. Yeah. I totally, but it, you know, whatever. It's been a long time since I've been in this.
That's fair. I just want to bring this up for a second though, because in some of the discourse I've been involved in the last several weeks, which has been harrowing and depressing, I see stuff like that, or see claims like the one that you just made, which is that women have been told, keep your mouth shut. And I wonder to what extent that is something which is present in daily life versus what has been memed so extensively that it sort of entered the subconscious.
I don't know, because I, of course, am canceled locally and I stay away from a lot of
bathrooms.
Bathrooms.
Yeah.
Especially now that I have a Crohn's diagnosis, I'm just staying next to my own bathroom all the time.
The little notes that you get from your local police officers that say, Nina Paley, please stop loitering around the bathrooms.
But, you know, until very recently, there was a great big no turf sign at the art store.
That's true.
And I have a younger friend
who is... Co-op.
It's the art coop. It rhymes with poop.
It's a handy mnemonic, actually.
Yes. It's like, oh, excuse me, I have to go take a po-op.
Okay. The art coop being the local art store which put up a no turf sign to ban you, and which you resolved by going to the Human Rights Commission of Urbana and filing a complaint, which the owners responded to by removing the sign. So
yes,
kudos,
and replacing it with a ginormous trans women or women sign, which is fine.
And a really, really, really tiny little one. You can't barely even see it, but it says trans men or men.
Oh, does it?
No.
No.
only men's needs are really centered by the owners of the art coop.
Yeah.
I've heard. Allegedly.
Yes. Anyway, this younger friend of mine says that there's a popular bar, and the women's room of that popular bar has all this no turf stickers all over it. And she apparently put some turfy stickers next to or on top of the misogynistic stickers, and they were ripped down like within minutes.
Within minutes?
Minutes, because then she went back to the bathroom and they'd already been ripped down.
Wow.
But
more stickers are needed.
Anyway, I only know, well, I know my own experiences, and then I see photos of things. And when I was at the university last, which is right before I was massively canceled, they had turned some women's rooms into all gender bathrooms.
But not the men's rooms.
I would have to look at more bathrooms to know that.
You know, men are very vulnerable, Nina. They don't want to be standing at the urinal with their penises, their flaccid penises pointed at the wall, and have a woman come in and see them. So I do think that it's pretty valuable for us to consider how vulnerable men are in that position with their pants around their legs, Like, they can't fight back. If a woman came in and the man was there up against the urinal, there's no way that they'd really be able to fight back.
That's right. It's very well known that women pose an enormous physical threat to men. Women can apparently get men pregnant.
I've heard that. It shows up in the news now and then. But I derailed you because you started
totally
off by
saying...
You
totally derailed me and I have no idea why.
Well, it's because we're talking about things that are inside baseball, and of our 40 listeners, there might be 30 of them who need to know that this is a baseball game and not a football game.
Okay.
But you said women have been told to ignore their instincts.
Yes, women have been told to ignore their instincts. And have I personally been... I mean, to some extent, yeah, I've been told to say trans women are women.
Yeah.
And I've been, you know, when I was canceled in my town, I was basically told to say that and to not say things like women don't have penises.
Right.
And that I was hurting people by saying things and that I was a horrible person. So, yeah, I was bullied.
Coerced.
I mean, I didn't actually succumb to it. I was just fully canceled instead. But I totally believe that this is happening on multiple levels. Also, the stories from female athletes, you know, we attended the Icons conference.
Yes.
And heard from Paula Scanlon about the way the female swimmers were treated by the university and the athletic department. And
they're told if they had a problem with it, they had to deal with it themselves and go see a therapist and otherwise keep it to themselves, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, appalling. I have no way of verifying absolutely everything, but I am confident that this is happening and that it's widespread. I am very confident, highly confident. Mm. It jibes with my own personal experience.
Well, so are you going to start gagging a little bit when we record our podcast together?
Why would I gag?
Because you need to develop your revulsion instinct.
Oh, right.
There's
there's
a whole class of people by whom you are now meant to respond emotionally and not logically and embrace this sort of drive to push people outside of the boundaries of the norms, right?
Yeah. So
that could be phrased better.
There are people I find disgusting. Mm. There are people. In fact, what's ironic about the Phil Illy story is that on that very same trip, just a couple days, just one day actually, before the conference, we had an encounter with another man who wasn't even in a dress. We had an encounter with a man that was claiming to be a woman. And he was modestly dressed in a t-shirt and jeans.
And a jacket.
And I felt disgust. He was setting off all of my alarms. And I was heeding that. And in fairly short order, he was ejected from the event that we were at.
Yes.
And that was right. And the thing about Phil is that I did not have any disgust reaction to Phil. But I certainly feel disgust sometimes. And I attend to it and I heed it. And that's not a bad thing. I don't want people to override their disgust reaction. At the same time, I have certain boundaries and ideas about tolerance and liberty. And I do not want disgust. Overemphasized. I mean, the thing about the disgust argument, the thing about this article, actually, Revulsion Revolution, is I just thought so many people are disgusted by homosexuality.
Oh, yeah.
And many people are disgusted just by women's bodies. I mean, I walk around without a bra now.
Ugh. Ugh.
I know.
How could you?
I know. Ugh. I don't shave my legs. I'm pretty disgusting to a lot of people. And I hope that those people can not exclude me from public, you know? Like, they have to tolerate me. I have to tolerate them. We have to tolerate a lot of disgusting things in public.
But this is the point of this article, is that we don't have to tolerate that, Nina.
Well, we're deciding where the lines are drawn, right? And I drew my lines a while ago. It's like sex segregated spaces. Humans can't change sex. They're, you know, like sex is a fact. And
yes.
Men should not be in women's changing rooms, prisons, facilities, taking their scholarships.
Yeah.
Bathrooms.
You've got a clear scope definition.
Yes. And it's based on sex. It's not based on whether they're disgusting or wearing a dress. The thing is that any man who is disgusting in my scenario is, like, whether he's disgusting or not, he's not going to be in allowed in women's spaces because he's male.
Mm. Okay.
And then if he shows up somewhere, he's going to be in public, and then people can decide to move far away from him or leave. But, you know, these men are not to enter women's spaces. And the particular man wearing the t-shirt and jeans that I found horrible, he had entered a private event at somebody's home.
He was invited, in fact.
Well, he was not known. He responded to all the right things.
Right.
And yeah, then he was asked to leave.
Yeah. Well, I'm seeing some of the, you had mentioned just a few minutes ago that you have some doubt as to whether the people who use the label of being gender critical even have the mindset at this point of having an analysis that constitutes a criticism of gender identity or gender ideology, and that they're not really gender critical.
Right. Many of them, I'm noticing, seem to... I hate to say this because this is something that trans activists have lobbed against gender critical radical feminists, but some of these women seem to actually be defending gender for women. Like, they're like, dresses and makeup, that's ours.
I thought that's what the patriarchy was there to do, is to make sure that women had to wear that stuff.
Well, sometimes the patriarchy makes sure that women have to wear burkas.
Well, burkas are for women. It would be terrible if men started wearing burkas. That's woman face.
Right. Or woman face covering, either way.
Can I read you a tweet that our former guest Miranda Yardley sent to me that was written by our former guest Karen Davis?
Sure.
All right. This is from November 30th at 5:06. Well, I guess it's 5:06 somewhere, but it's 11:30, November 30th. All right. It reads, "I'll help it be less weird for you by repeating it. We need to arrest male crossdressers because the vast, vast majority of them are sexual fetishists using non-consenting passersby as validation objects. Lock them up."
Wow. I don't agree with that.
I don't remember her sharing that sentiment with us when she was recording with us, but her views may have drifted slightly in the year and a half since we spoke with her.
That is illiberal.
What? Why? Locking up people because they're dressed in a way that you don't like?
Yeah.
I think that this is the end point of the revulsion revolution is that when we are disgusted by people and then we have the power to detain them and punish them and persecute them and prosecute them, as Karen Davis is advocating, then, you know, we have achieved our ends of the revolution. That is the revolution succeeding at its aim of instilling revulsion in society at large.
Do you think that's what this is arguing for? Is trying to amplify revulsion?
Which, the article?
This article, Revulsion, well, Revolution.
Goodness. It says it as the thesis, I think, in the first paragraph, if I remember correctly.
Let's read this. Okay, I'll read the paragraph.
Yeah, please.
Public paraphilias are harmful, particularly to women/children. Our revulsion instinct in the face of these open fetishes is not only an alarm bell alerting us to potential danger, but a valuable social tool that can be wielded as a weapon to help us curb unwanted behaviors from individuals whose toxic proclivities threaten healthy community relationships.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, okay, you're right. I mean, public paraphilias.
Wielded as a weapon. I like this new saucy embrace of violence from the I don't know if they're gender critical. You know, the term that I've tried to ignite and failed, Nina, is the term gender Calvinist. Because if you look at the origins of Calvinism, which was very preoccupied by moral purity, following a period of Christianity where sin was very common and there were a lot of hypocrites in the church, and Calvinism came along as a sort of way to clean this up and create social hygiene. I think that gender Calvinism is a defensible or a good term to describe this.
Yes,
this,
except you could just aspect. Skip Calvin and just call it gender Puritanism.
Yeah, I didn't think that was easy to abbreviate as GC, though. That would be GP.
Oh, you wanted the C. Okay.
I did.
But yeah, I'm a little tired of the GC. It doesn't really mean much. So we can do GP, which stands for general practitioner.
Okay.
You know, the sort of person that would refer you to a specialist that would lead to a colonoscopy, and then you would discover you have Crohn's disease.
Crohn's disease, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you ask me, some of these individuals do constitute the bloody colon of the movement. And what's more is that they certainly weren't there at the beginning, but they are there right at the end.
I really do not like what's happening because, as you pointed out, the author of this, Amy Souza, does really important work.
Yes. Should not be lost.
Yes. And I don't want to just go like, she wrote something that I don't like and
cancel her.
Yeah. Now I don't like her. I don't like this trend. And I don't know what to do with myself. I don't know how to orient myself with what's happening right now. I guess, yeah, I don't have to orient myself because they're going to orient me for me. I mean, yep, they hate me now.
I have seen more than one time you being called a tranny lover, which is really funny because I'm sure I've seen that sort of construct before around other groups that were excluded by the majority. I don't remember. I had somebody make a comment to me in the last day that I thought was really quite on point, Nina, that I'd like to share with you.
All right.
So I had written a tweet that said, I'll read my tweet and then I'll read the response. The tweet said, "The madness I saw infect the trans community is not contained within the trans community." So by that I mean the madness that gripped the trans community is not something that is, I should have said isolated, is not isolated to the trans community. So any group can be manipulated to replace reason with emotion, to replace curiosity with fear, to replace openness with paranoia, to replace dialogue with violence. It is so human. So in part, this particular article is what inspired me to write that. But there are many and many other inspirations in the discourse right now that caused me to write that. So Donna May, who is self-described as a stylish bisexual gynandromorphic barfly and Jedi level AGP, you know, the Jedi's wore dresses in the movies, I guess, so that makes sense. Donna May replies, "Not to excuse it, but the madness is an adaptation to the incentives created by identity politics. Victimhood is currency."
That's rather insightful.
I like that comment. And it sort of echoes something that you and I have been talking about offline for a while, which is that I have expressed a few times this frustration that although there are many, 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 many billions of individual women who all have their own viewpoints and experiences and politics and ideologies and likes and dislikes, that it is common and frequent in the current discourse that we are around and in for one woman to make a sweeping generalization or a sweeping preference that encompasses all women. Oh, women don't like to see men dressed in blue dresses, which is probably true of some women, or maybe many women, but you were saying that, like, what we noticed at GenSpect, and from your own point of view, you would not be a woman based on that definition. And neither would I.
Well, you're not a woman based on my definition.
Yeah, I know. You're
Or the dictionary's definition.
Well, or biological samples or observation or there are a lot of measurements that would exclude me from that, but also this one. But I see this as in the after event of the blue dress discourse, a lot of women who presume to speak for all women in these types of statements.
You know what? I'm once again gender nonconforming because I am not conforming to this idea of womanhood.
Yeah. Which idea?
The idea that a woman is going to be disgusted by a man in a dress.
Right. Because you're an individual.
Yes, but it's like if we say that, I mean, that's gender, right? I mean, there's nothing inherent about being female that makes you disgusted by a man in a dress. But if you know that women are supposed to be disgusted by men in dresses, you could, you know, learn that. And then if you're like me, you're just like, no, I'm not actually disgusted by this. Then you're gender nonconforming. I'm just as female as the women who are disgusted by men in dresses. But I'm, you know, they got more gender going on. The gender thing is, I can't help but notice that a lot of the women I have seen ranting about Phil Ille are, shall we say, more gender conforming than I am. That they noticeably wear makeup, which is not something that I do.
I'm well, sure they don't have a choice, though, Nina.
Why?
Because the patriarchy sets these standards to which women who don't abide them are punished and erased. And if they want to have any sort of participation in feminist discourse, then the only way for them to be taken seriously is to embody these gender stereotypes imposed upon them by men.
Well, that explains why I've been erased.
Who?
Anyway, I just couldn't help but notice that. that they seem to really be into their lipstick. And
the sun, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty that don't also. I just like really noticed ones doing this. I don't know what's going on. You know, we've identified a thing, and I guess we're going through we're trying to accept what has happened to what we used to call the gender critical movement. And we're disenchanted and maybe disidentifying with it. And I am also asking myself, what now? I would like to talk about women who are not behaving this way, not behaving this crazy, destructive way.
Yeah.
That's the sports women.
Oh, yeah.
Icons is not doing this stuff. In fact, there's two groups. Icons is not participating in any of this crazy. And as far as I can tell, neither is Sex Matters.
Yeah. They seem like they're focused on other issues.
I mean, the real issues. The great thing about Icons and the sports women is that they have their eyes on the prize. They know what they're doing. They are very clear they do not want men in women's sports. And that's their goal, and they're focused. Like athletes, you know? Like people who achieve things. It's as though they've been trained to have goals and achieve them.
They are good leaders and good inspiration. I'm inspired by them.
Yes. And so when I see this happening among the GC, whether it be gender critical, gender conservative, gender Calvinist, this horrible infighting and illiberalism, I am just not seeing that with the Icons women. And so yeah. I would love to work with the Icons women. And as I think about what I'm going to be doing moving forward, maybe I can be of use to those projects. And of course, I love
Sex Matters. If you're not too divisive.
If I'm not too divisive,
mm-hmm.
How would I be divisive?
Well, I mean, you taunted a good amount of the internet by posting a picture of yourself in a Phil Illy dress.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, maybe people will see you as the jester that you really are instead of the crony crone.
I'm a crony crone jester. I just could not. I mean, when I did that picture with the dress, it's not that I'm a huge fan of Phil Illy.
Right.
I'm just a huge enemy of illiberalism.
You're making a statement, which is, this is a piece of clothing. How come you are losing your minds, you fools?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There was something else in the news this week. Do you mind if I jump forward on this?
Please.
Yeah. So have you seen that there was a testimony this week in the United States Congress over the issue of men and women's sports? Speaking of icons and sportswomen.
Probably. Wasn't there also testimony of like academic leaders?
Yes. Allowing anti-Semitism on their campus. But these are two interesting things this week. But I want to talk about the sports one for a second here. Because there's a video going around of the National Women's Law Center's president, Fatima Ghos Graves, maybe it's Goss Graves, who is giving an explanation to this question where she's quite a good speaker because she doesn't come right out and say this, but she says in response to this query about boys and girls sports, that sports is really about learning to compete on a team and learning to dedicate yourself to achievement and learning how to lose gracefully. And this was excerpted in such a way as to emphasize that this woman who's the president of the National Women's Law Center is excusing males competing in women's sports. I happened to respond to this as a quote tweet, and just to point this out, Nina, because this goes along with what you were talking about, but we have all of these national women's groups, like the National Women's Law Center, the National Center for Lesbian Rights. I don't have the note up, but there's also like National Center for Women and Families. We've got the UN Women's Group. So we've got all of these well-funded, influential, and respectable women's organizations that are simping for the rights of men to represent themselves as women. You'd say that's a fair way of saying that, right?
Yeah.
So it struck me yesterday that in our world, in the whatever is the gender critical or the gender realist or the gender materialist, I don't know what these people really want to call themselves, gender abolitionists, that so much attention and focus has been put on to criticizing our friends at GenSpect for allowing one of their conference attendees to wear a garment designed for the opposite sex and to promote a book that the author describes as his form of sexuality, that was so much energy spent on it. Like, how many homes could you power for how many days, for how much energy was spent on it? A tremendous amount. It's still being expended on it. And in the meanwhile, you have the president of the National Women's Law Center coming up to Congress and saying, yeah, of course boys should be allowed to compete on women's sports. And it just struck me, Nina, that I got invested in this conflict also, but it is so picayune, so trivial, such a tiny little blip in the universe, while the juggernauts of these non-governmental organizations, which represent themselves as being voices for women nationally, continue to stamp all over the rights of women. And they're not criticized for it, except for minor call-outs, but there's no significant amount of organization raised in order to recapture these organizations. But GenSpect, that is something that we need to rage about for 4 weeks until the leadership there starts to have stress panics, right? Not that necessarily happened, but that's the aim of the critics, is to cause that sort of reaction. It's just ludicrous.
What do you think is behind it?
There is this concept that is called the narcissism of small differences. So when we look, there's that. So when we look at the fact that all of us are, at the end of the day, all of us want sex segregated spaces where appropriate or justified. We want sex and gender identity to be either clearly separated in law, or for gender identity not to even be acknowledged in law. I don't think that's possible, but I don't have to get into that. But we want almost all of the same stuff at the end of the day. And the fact that it's not almost all the same stuff, by God, this is why we have to make war on each other, is because these tiny little differences between us are the things that help us to position ourselves socially with respect to one another, over and under one another. And then I would say that the other thing, and I learned this recently, I've moved on to a new book, which is called The Identity Trap by Yasha Monk. Have you heard of this?
I have heard of it.
All right. I've started listening to it on audio, because I listen to this sort of stuff when I drive. he brings up this concept called group polarization. And I don't remember if I sent you anything about group polarization.
You did.
I did? Okay. I don't have it up. Do you remember a little bit what it's about?
I said, like, little differences in groups get really extreme as the groups discuss the differences.
Yeah, there's some example that he uses where there was an experiment done with a mock jury, and each member of the jury was asked to estimate how much the plaintiff ought to pay out for damages for this court case. And privately, each one of the mock jurists estimated somewhere between $500,000 and $2 million for the injury. And when they got together and started talking about it out loud, the number that they decided on was actually $5 million. So by pulling these ideas out into the public discourse, and there's some sort of pressure that seems to mount, driving people towards more extreme positions on the topic that is at hand.
So you think that is, it's just the dynamic, that's the dynamic that's leading to the...
I think that's a good part of it, yeah.
I'm thinking that when women form, well, people, but these are mostly women, women form these groups and communities and seek opportunities to climb within the communities. And there's so much like junior high school, because just like in junior high school, I'm not doing that, so they're all saying mean things about me, right? Like
yes,
it's Nina Paley is a bitch is written on the lockers once again on Twitter. And I've been around, I've been through this so many times now that I'm not panicking. I don't know how much of my feminist fan base is gone. I've had people recently declare on Twitter that they're, they even bought my art and that they supported me, and they're so disgusted with me now.
How dare you?
How could they have even done that? They've been fools. And of course, this is what happened with the trans allies as well. They said exactly the same thing. So, and of course, this also happened in junior high school. But I just wonder if this is a kind of, I don't know, that the social order within groups of women, this just happens. Like, I think about the Stella O'Malley, Kelly J. Keen talk.
Oh, goodness gracious.
On Benjamin Boyce, which to me looked like a struggle session, but it really looked like the higher ranking Kelly J. Keen was establishing dominance over Stella O'Malley, and Stella O'Malley was rolling over and exposing her belly in public to Kelly J. Keen. And
now in Stella's defense, Nina, Stella's belly is magnificently fluffy and pettable.
That's your cat. That's not Stella. That's your cat, Harley.
Oh, man. This whiskey is really going straight to my head.
I don't know. There's so much positioning, and there's like when I was watching another woman, what was it? Slightly Twisted Female had a video with Exa Lansik, and Exa Lansik was mostly just sitting there, and Slightly Twisted Female was with her very noticeable lipstick and makeup was going on and on about what a witch Phil Illy is, and was sort of compounding his crimes against humanity or female humanity. And it just seemed like there was some kind of status inflation that was happening from that. And, you know, I understand why people would do that, because just like in junior high, I had contempt for the so-called popular girls. I had contempt for everyone that was spending their time positioning themselves in the social hierarchy, because I thought that was stupid. But I really paid the price for thinking it was stupid, because if you don't play that game, you're on the bottom.
Yep. You lose by not playing.
Yes. You lose by not playing. And it's really not fun. And I bear the scars of that. And you would think that I would have wised up.
I have similar scars, Nina. And this is probably one of the reasons that you and I are friends, is because we are not naturals at the social climbing game. In fact, I think you and I both have a side of us that really enjoys shaking the ladder that people are trying to climb up.
Yeah, but it does hurt. Like, I get it. I get why people don't want to be like you or me. I get it. This is not... Yeah. This is not... It doesn't feel good to have so much contempt pointed at you.
Yes, to be told that you are that you are emblematic of everything that is wrong for them.
Yes. And also just to be, it's like I'm called a handmaiden again. People have argued, it's not really an argument. People have claimed that Shannon Thrace and I defend Phil Illy because we're sweet on him, we're sexually attracted to him, because both of us have had autogynephilic partners earlier in our lives. Yeah. And therefore, well, you know, we're just...
To be fair, Nina, I do feel quite a lot of revulsion at any woman who's ever had an autogynephilic partner.
Now,
they're dead to me. Actually, I would call them, I don't know, widows, maybe trans widows. I'm kidding. Those people are utterly the complete victims, and like we do with victimhood ideology, is put them at the top of the heap. Right. So I apologize for my remarks, which were insensitive and typical of a misogynist, hateful, egotistical, narcissist pervert.
Yes. Speaking of which, how can you have any respect for me given that I hang out with you? You must be absolutely disgusted with me.
Revolted.
Revolted, yes.
Revolted. We're ladder shakers, I guess. Oh, that outfit that you designed for me is absolutely beautiful, by the way.
Oh, I hope you get some good pictures of it.
Yeah, that needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, so where are we? We're calling this episode Esprit de Corps.
Esprit de Corps. Right, so can I tell you my inspiration for that title?
Sure, I can guess it, but...
Episode, well, okay, guess.
Well, the gender critical is dead. You predicted that back in episode 21. So this is the corpse of the gender critical movement, which we're beating, I guess.
It is. In fact, episode 6 is titled Gender Critical is Dead, All Hail Gender Critical.
Oh, that's episode 6?
Episode 6, oh, episode 21 is my prediction that there would be that it is impossible to maintain the equilibrium of having the Kelly J. Keene followers and the J.K. Rowling followers identifying under the same ideological label.
Yeah, well, that seems to be borne out. People seem really angry now about the J.K. Rowling quote about dress how you like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I thought that they would turn on that, and they did. Our frenemy Tila Wild suggested that I call myself Mix Nostradamus. MX, Mix Nostradamus.
Mix Nostradamus. Mm-hmm. How about Nostradamus? that. Nostradamus or Nostradama. Nostradame.
Nostradamix?
Nostradamsel.
No, let's stop with this.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, in the same article, Revulsion Revolution, The Protective Power of Disgust, there is a heading that says, but J.K. Rowling said, dress however you please. Followed by the notion that we can accept the blanket statement that people can dress however they please with no social consequences is akin to the notion of blanket inclusivity within trans ideology. So I guess...
J.K. Rowling, trans activist, you heard it here first. And trans apologist, J.K. Rowling.
I wonder how J.K. Rowling is, I wonder what she's thinking about all this. She is wisely not chiming in.
No.
A good idea.
She's a smart woman.
Yeah.
With great taste in playing cards, Nina.
That's true. Right. So what's next for us?
I think that we should focus on other topics that are interesting to us.
We'll probably always be interested in this topic. And you Absolutely. Know what? We can also just focus on the people doing the great work in this area. Again, as we mentioned, Icons and Sex Matters and probably others.
Yeah. You know, we've never spoken with Maya Forstater.
True. Although we did speak to her fellow queen or her sister queen, Helen Joyce. But, you know, we know that they're awesome. I mean, that's another thing with interviewing people is kind of like, here's another awesome person who's awesome, who says a bunch of stuff we agree with.
Yeah. I miss some of the guests that we've had that challenge our way of seeing the world and thinking about things. We should try to get more people that think we're stupid on
yeah,
as guests.
They won't talk to us. I really wanted to get Cohen. What's her first name?
Belissa.
Belissa, right. I wanted Belissa to come on and talk about why you need to detransition.
Right. But Belissa has indicated that a precondition for her coming on to talk about why I am not detransitioning is that I first detransition.
Right.
It's sort of a chicken and egg problem, and I'm still an egg.
She wants to crack your egg.
She wants to crack my detransition egg.
Your detransition egg. I actually do think that's an interesting topic. And maybe we should just talk about it with somebody else. Although now that we have identified this movement as a corpse, it's a bit yes. less interesting because it's already a lost cause. But yes, this corpse yes. definitely contains all of the women that think that post-op... medicalized, I don't know, feminized eunuchs like yourself should take further steps to masculinize.
Yes, to continue our gender journey of masculinization and body modification.
Yes. And of course, as a gender critical person, I just think all you could do would be gendered. All you could do yes. would be to do various things to perform masculinity and to have further medical interventions that would make you appear more masculine.
There's only doing what you know, Nina. It would be a very sad and pathetic and humorous figure for me to show up in the world and I don't know, being a dude with the other dudes.
Yeah. You're never. All,
yeah. That's it's never gonna go that way.
But you could pretend more. It's just that it's layering on the pretending.
Yeah.
But, and really my issue with all this is that, well, this is gender, right? This is what I don't want people to be bound to. You're male, no right. matter what you do, no matter how
yep.
long your hair is, you're male. And so
And no matter how short your hair is, you're female.
I know. And
doesn't make a difference.
Guess I just don't have a lot of insecurity about my sex or yours for that matter.
Yeah, I used to.
Yeah. But so it just seems like
change.
Like if one is gender critical, one would be critical of pressuring a man to be more masculine. And one would be critical of pressuring a woman to be more feminine.
I think we should start to wrap this up, but I want to complain about one more thing before we do.
Yeah.
There are, again, this, I think that a good description of this is group polarity. I've seen an increasing number of people who claim to be gay or lesbian making the claim that there is nothing to do at all between trans and gay and lesbian. And this has been the thing in recent memory which has gotten me closest to feeling furious, because there's no way that any rational person can reconcile the claims that boys and girls who would otherwise grow up to be gays and lesbians are being transitioned with this notion that there's nothing at all to do between trans and gay and lesbian. Because a lot of people who transition, whether they started when they were younger and this whole transition field opened up for them and pulled them in, or if they were older, and I'm talking largely about masculine lesbians who transitioned and took testosterone and had double mastectomies, there is a lot to do between homosexuality and transgenderism. There's a lot to do. That doesn't mean that every trans person is gay or lesbian. We know that there's a lot that aren't. And it doesn't mean that every gay or lesbian is trans. Obviously, that's not the case at all. But to allege that there's nothing between them at all is just so pigheadedly stupid. It makes me madder the more I think about it.
Why do you think people are saying that?
Like I said, I think this has something to do with group polarization, that they're really trying to distinguish they're trying to one-up themselves. Like there's not room for nuance when the thing they're trying to do is establish where they are on the social hierarchy. The more extreme their viewpoint is, the more committed they are to the cause that they have allied themselves to.
Okay. You don't think it's just a reaction to the forced teaming of having the T being slapped on the
LGBT? I reject this whole concept of forced teaming.
Really?
I think it's really, yeah. Do you know what forced teaming is? Do you know where the term comes from? That's a better question.
Do I know where the term comes from? I don't know right. Who originated it.
Yeah, it's from the book The Gift of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the term is used to describe things like when a predator is saying, like somebody that you met at a bar, oh, wow, it's awfully late to be walking home by yourself. Let's walk together.
Mm.
That's forced teaming.
Mm. I did not know that.
Yep. But some person in the gender Calvinist world picked that up from the book, The Gift of Fear, and decided to expand the meaning of it to describe how social movements connect with each other. So while if you look at the activism with a broader scope, you'll see things like environmentalists declaring that environmentalism and free Palestine are linked issues, right? The people who would call T being part of LGBT forced teaming should also say that it is forced teaming to join the pro-Hamas faction with the pro-environmental faction. They don't, because they're only focused on this one particular tiny little issue. But they ought to describe that as forced teaming. But that is not where the term comes from. And I would describe what they're doing as a form of gaslighting.
Do you know where the term gaslighting comes from?
Yes, there's a 1975 political tract that was written. Did I say 1975?
Yes.
1795 political tract that was pushing for their early abolition of slavery. And this was after the Revolutionary War had finished, but it was around the time that the Constitution and its amendments were being considered. And this tract was making this very powerful comment saying that anybody ought to be able to stand underneath the gaslight, whether they're white or black. And everybody who's in a gaslight should be considered a free man or woman.
That's not where it comes from.
Yes, it is, Nina.
I feel a little crazy.
Why? Did you think it was from something else?
I thought there was a movie. Wasn't there a movie?
Oh, there was, but they appropriated the term from this earlier use. Yeah, that's something that happens all the time is that movie. Yeah, I should have mentioned that in my explanation, but that movie completely has erased from public memory that earlier but previously well-documented use.
Yeah. Gaslit by gaslight.
This is all I got, Nina.
It's gaslights all the way down. Well, now all our listeners have been gaslit as well. And yes. Also forced onto our team.
You are part of the Heterodorks team now, listener, whether you like it or not.
You have no choice. We're going to walk you home.
For your safety.
So thank you for listening, TERFs and Trannies.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.